quick throw left side, has the first down and more up the sideline. 40, 30, 20, 10, 5, touchdown, Houston.
There is no offseason for your Houston Texans. Game day is every day. Now, it's Texans All Access.
Oh, yes, it is. Good evening. Hello, Texans. Mark Vandermeer and John Harris with you, and we're back. That's right. Johnny, I've been on vacation for about 5.5 weeks. Has anything happened I need to know about? Like, nothing? Like,
oh, Senior Bowl is great.
Oh, Senior Bowl was good.
Senior Bowl was very good.
I feel like Thomas Jefferson in Hamilton. Like, what did I miss? So what did I, like, in the last 5 weeks or so, did I miss anything? Anyway, we're here in the Sports Radio 610 studios tonight live because it is season 10 of Texans Radio as we know it with these during-the-week programs, which we started in 2012. So this is the 10th season of this stuff. And for those of you who remember, we started it with Tuesday shows, noon to 2. Then we added Thursdays in a year or two later, 6 to 7. And then at some point, Greg Grissom decided that I wasn't working hard enough and needed to work 5 nights a week. I'm just kidding. I'm kidding.
No,
5 nights a week, 6 to 7 p.m., and Johnny joined the Texans Radio Brigade in 2014, so this is our 8th season together.
Yeah. I'm being selfish, 8 years, all that matters. This is the 8th year.
Yeah, that's right.
That's all.
But it's the 20th season of the Houston Texans about to begin here. You know, the league year starts, what, March 18th, right? But the Super Bowl was played yesterday, so the Super Bowl's in the books. The offseason really kind of... I know it began weeks ago, everybody making coaching changes who had to do that, whatever else. But, you know, this is it, okay? Everybody's done. Everybody's 0-0. Let's go. It's 2021. And the Houston Texans included 7 coaching openings, and they were all filled. Texans last to fill it. And we're going to talk a bunch about the staff. Again, they haven't released the rest of the staff, Johnny, and they're not even done yet. But we can talk about who's been reported to be taking over some of these positions, like very badly kept secrets, like Lovey and people like that who are going to be working in the building. Anyway, it's good to see you because I know so much has happened. And look, you and I talk all the time, but here we are talking on the air. And it's great to have the listeners back. And as you know, we talk a lot about our experiences in the building, what we do, working around around the team. Just got through the COVID season, which was totally bizarre. I just wrote a story about broadcasting a game with coronavirus, which I hadn't gone public with, but I just did. It's on the website and the Texans app as well.
I outed you probably a few times in doing interviews.
You did?
I don't think here. I did one with my buddy Sal Capaccio in Buffalo. Actually,
I was out of market. You were out of
here. I was out of market. I don't know if I ever did it here though.
Yeah.
Not that I can remember. But the thing about that game was we were all in different locations.
Yeah.
Like, all of us.
Yeah.
You were in one place. Dre was in one place.
Yeah.
I was down in my moat.
Uh-huh.
Robert was up in the booth.
Yep, whatever that
with
is.
With David. They were up there. So
and
we
they're
were all
separated, too. They're a good 25 feet or something apart.
Yeah. It was nuts. I remember, and I think it was the Packers game.
It was the Packers game
because we went into the bye the next week. Yeah. And I was like, thank God we have. I was like that in that broadcast. I mean, we got done with it and was like, hey, you wouldn't really have known. But I just remember I was in immense pain because I was dealing with my back issue.
Oh my gosh. On top of everything else.
And so all that's going on. I'm in the moat. I mean, that first were problems, of course. The whole moat situation this year. Yeah. Oh, I could write a dissertation.
Which is the first row of seats in the stadium. So
right.
It's the front row, basically.
Right.
Instead of being on the sideline, you had to be up there
because
of coronavirus.
It's great because you could see pretty well.
Slightly elevated.
For the most part, it was great. Mm-hmm. But then when I don't want to get into it, but when you have like the national broadcast that take over the 50-yard line and you can't pass on the moat, there's a fight that almost started in Chicago because of this. Because of the CBS, was it CBS that day or Fox? I can't remember which one. They didn't have a sideline reporter. They just had somebody there kind of manning things, and they had a screen, a monitor.
Right.
So they could look at it, and the monitor was kind of blocking, and one of the cameramen came over and was in a strong Chicago accent, was like, you got to move.
We
can't get by. And so this whole thing starts about getting by. Well, I just decided that day I was going to stand above the tarp because there's no fans. So I just stood above the tarp at the 50-yard line. I was fine. That was great. I just got to watch the whole thing. It was craziness all year long. But here's the thing, Mark. 256 games were regular season games were played.
Right.
Playoff games and Super Bowl all played on time, which is a minor miracle.
Well, not minor on miracle. Time. Not necessarily. On time,
but they were the Super Bowl was played.
We had some Tuesday night action.
Yeah.
We had a Wednesday. Did we have a Wednesday night? We had a Wednesday night.
We did. We had a Wednesday night.
Wait, what was the afternoon? Was that a Thursday or a Wednesday afternoon with the Ravens?
Ravens and Steelers.
How about that? Games. We had some weirdness, but not as much as you might think. You're right, with all those games.
We got them all played. Yeah. And February 7th was yesterday. That's when the Super Bowl was scheduled.
Mm-hmm.
And it was played, which...
And they did a hell of a job in the stands with the Super Bowl. All the cardboard cutouts. There were times when
couldn't
I...
Couldn't tell.
Yeah, I'm, you know, I've got high-definition television, Xfinity, yeah. And I'm thinking, you know, I'm you squinting tell. My eyes a little bit. I'm thinking, this looks like a Super Bowl.
Yeah, it was... Know? It was. There's no doubt it was bizarre to be on road games, and you guys were back here, and I was there. It was odd and strange on so many different levels.
Yeah.
But I remember thinking when obviously COVID hit and, you know, we were all aware of it at the beginning of March and then we really went on shutdown. It was like March 13th, 14th, somewhere in that range. I remember thinking, okay, well, what do you do with pro days? What do you do with the draft? What do you do with the offseason? Like, what are you going to do with all these things? And then the NFL said, all right, well, we're going to go virtual offseason. Everybody go home.
Yeah.
You're going to learn at home. Draft. You're going to do interviews through Zoom. You're all out of the building. You get out.
Right.
And, nah, you can't do that. Pulled off the draft.
Mm-hmm.
Virtual offseason. Nah, you can't do that. They did it. How are you going to do this season? Well, we're going to cut preseason games, and then we're going to put in these requirements. We're going to test them every day. We're going to do all that. You can't do all that. And they did it.
Yeah.
And they pulled it off. And now you see other sports leagues that are following. Basketball is playing, I think, in their arenas now because they looked at what the NFL did and said, hey, we can do that.
Yeah. We got our own planes. We can somehow. Do it. Yeah. You know, let's do it. Test and... You know, basketball is a whole other thing. What are they, 75 games or something like that? It's a shortened season.
Yeah, I can't remember what it is.
And
they're playing games in their own arenas.
I was at Toyota Center the other night. I watched the Rockets and the Spurs. And nice. For Vander Kidd's birthday, it's an annual tradition we have to go. And, you know, it's a game close to his birthday. And it was a lot of fun to be there. And, you know, they're pulling it off. So good for them. I mean, you'd rather see the joint filled up.
Mm-hmm.
Although for me, you know, as I get a little more seasoned, I'm like, hey, this is nice. I can really spread out. This is great. I got this whole section. But that's probably not the most economically sound way of doing it for these sports leagues. Anyway, Super Bowl played yesterday, of course. Tom Brady and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers beating the Chiefs. We'll get to that in a few moments. Let's talk about the Texans here, Johnny. As obviously, the year did not go according to plan. And you mentioned it last offseason, not having the OTAs and the training camp situation was totally different. And the joint practices and preseason games. I think this affected them maybe more than a lot of teams because, hey, Bill O'Brien was saying at the time, we're getting some veteran guys in here, you know, should be able to pick up the offense pretty quickly, and Brandon Cooks knows it and everything like that. I just think that the timing, look, I'm not a coach, but I can see with my own eyes that they were better as the year went on. I know they made the coaching change after week four, but they were better as the year went on than they were earlier. And look, they were still slinging it and putting up big numbers with Chad Hansen and Kiki QT catching the ball and Fuller out for the year. And then obviously Randall Cobb getting hurt and Kenny Stills getting released. And they were still able to put up big numbers, big yards. Watson was terrific, led the league in passing. Coaching change, of course, it really happened in week four with Romeo taking over on an interim basis. But David Culley comes in, Casario before that as the GM. And the staff starting to round out a little bit here. So, look, Pep Hamilton as the quarterback coach with Tim Kelly staying as the offensive coordinator. I think that's an interesting dynamic right there because, look, Kelly's got less experience as a coordinator than Hamilton does himself, right? But Hamilton obviously has coached some pretty good quarterbacks and knows a thing or two. Coming off the Herbert situation, that's nice. And he had Andrew Luck as a young guy in this league. I mean, I think that there's a lot he brings to the table as a QB coach. And I think, you know, I would hope that Kelly only gets better as you go along. I think he got better as a coordinator along with the rest of the offense, as I point that out. I think Kelly got better as the year went on. In fact, you can hear that in our visits with him when we caught up with him on Mondays, every other Monday. He would talk about how he wouldn't say it directly, I feel like I'm improving, but you could hear it in his voice how he felt like he was on a better track.
Well, we talk about it all the time as it pertains from rookies going to second year players.
Mm-hmm.
Guy's going to make the leap. Well, that's what Tim was. Tim was a rookie coordinator. So now you're going into your second year. I remember long, long time ago, my very first year as a head coach, I remember going back and watching after my first year, watching us play, and I'm like, why am I doing that? What am I doing? Made some subtle changes to just scheme things that you saw after 1 year. And I'm sure that Tim would probably do that. My philosophy on it, Mark, has always been just, it's kind of the Julian Edelman philosophy. When Belichick drafted him back in 2009, he drafted him 6th, 7th round, and he called him and he just said, I don't know where I'm going to play you. You're not a quarterback. I don't know what I'm going to do with you, but we're going to figure it out.
Right.
It's essentially, you find enough good people and find enough good coaches, you figure it out. And so that, to me, is kind of the way you look at it and say, hey, look, Pep Hamilton, Tim Kelly, you know, thoughts about Josh McCown staying on the staff, all that kind of stuff. Well, they seemingly all would revolve around a quarterback. You figure it out. You figure it out. You just bring in as many good coaches as you can to put together as good a staff as you possibly can. And, yeah, you may not have the right fit at all times, but you keep working at it and you keep finding good guys to bring in and good coaches to bring in, and you'll figure it out. So, to me, I don't look at that and go, well, it's Tim, it's Pep. Like, are they going to – I don't think about it that way. I just think about it as there's a couple of really smart guys that have led NFL offenses. They can figure it out. They can figure it out. Well, so, let's – figure it out together and see what they can do together.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Some QB coaches are more like mini offensive coordinators where let's just hone in on these elements of the offense and everything, and they're less able to be your swing coach, if you will. Maybe they can see some things and certainly help you out, whereas some other quarterback coaches might be more, I don't know, technical in terms of the way you play, the way you throw, things like that, more like a Quincy Avery or what's the guy's name who coached Manziel and all those guys who we used to interview at the combine?
George Whitfield.
Yes. So, you know, some might be more like that. Some might be more like mini offensive coordinators.
Yeah, I think it varies depending on how the staff is put together in some sense. If the head coach is the play caller, like, you know, take, for instance, you know, Kansas City, we saw last night, or take the Bucks. You've got Byron Leftwich, who's the offensive coordinator, and basically the play calling is all him. That's what Bruce said. Bruce Arians said it's all on Byron. Well, because Byron's focused on the offense, then they maybe have a quarterback coach that is with Tom that they go through things and they share things together, and maybe there's a filter between them. That quarterback coach ends up being a filter between them and or between those two and Byron. Maybe they come together with Byron. The coach can then, you know, the quarterback coach can then go to Byron himself and say, hey, these are some of the things that Tom's talking about. Tom could talk to Byron about some of the things he likes. It's just varied on how I think the staff is put together and what the head coach is comfortable with what the coordinators are comfortable with. Last year, Tim was offensive coordinator and quarterback's coach. So maybe that's a lot to put on somebody to be both. Now, you've got to have the input of the quarterback, obviously, to your offense. But to not have that role specifically so you can have more of a 30,000-foot view of the entire operation may help. It may not. Some coordinators might want to have that quarterback coach title so they can just be, you know, hip-to-hip with the quarterback. Whereas some coordinators are like, no, I want to have a quarterback coach that kind of helps me, kind of becomes the filter between the quarterback and me and kind of put it all together that way. I think it just varies by staff. So I'm curious how this will go together. But again, I go back to my point. You just get good coaches and you put them together and you figure out and you have an operation for how you're going to do it. It might be different than how you did it. I've always said this a million times. Different doesn't mean better. It's just different. And so we'll see if it ends up being how different it is from what they did last year. Obviously a new head coach, and so we'll see how David Culley wants to do it and how he wants to put it together.
All right, tell me about Lovie now, Lovie Smith, because it got reported the week Culley was hired. In fact, it was in the wind that he was going to be the defensive coordinator. And Lovie is somebody who brings a great deal of experience to the table. He, you know, you look at his record in Chicago. You know, he took the Bears to a Super Bowl, another NFC Championship game. I think he was 10-6 the year that he was let go. I believe that's the case.
Yeah.
And, you know, look at the Illinois experience as, okay, that didn't go very well.
No.
To me, though, if you have a bad experience like that, doesn't necessarily mean you forgot everything you did well in the past, all right? Yeah. Especially when you were a coordinator, when you were an assistant coach, which is what he's going to be here. So tell me about him and what he might bring to the table.
Well, I'm curious to see what are some of the things that he may have learned in college. And what I mean by that,
seeing the offenses,
you see some different offenses. Now the Big Ten is not as varied, mm-hmm. I guess. Maybe I mean you do see Ohio State, and I'm trying to remember who all Illinois played because it was only six games this year. But
well, back in the day, you had when Purdue,
you still have some of that with
Northwestern,
LeBron there, Northwestern,
doing
it a little bit differently than what they did back in the Randy Walker days. But mm-hmm. point being, you see some things in college that are now filtering up. And we've said that a million times. High school things filter up to college. College things are filtering up to the NFL. We're seeing more of that. So Lovie's had an opportunity to see some of those things that are coming from college to the NFL and have that kind of added to his toolbox, if you will.
Yeah.
I've said that's hugely important because when you start looking around, like take, for instance, Brandon Staley. Brandon Staley with the Rams had been at, I'm trying to remember where he was. He was at a D3 school like seven, mm-hmm. 8 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, not even that long.
Not even. Maybe like 5 years ago, what it was, something like that. Anyways, he was coaching at a D3 level, and you've got to get pretty creative about some of the things you're doing. So from that perspective, you bring that with you to the Rams as a defensive coordinator. And some of the things that he was doing with the LA Rams, you're going, wait a second, I only see this on Saturdays when I'm watching college football, some of the things that they're doing. So maybe Lovie's learned from that particular aspect. But the one thing that we've known for a long time with Lovie, kind of coming out of the Tony Dungy school of Tampa 2, if you will, if that's a sort of scheme that allowed players to play fast, they wanted to create chaos up front, penetrate up front, create chaos up front, but you're going to play fast. Because we don't try and complicate things and make things. It doesn't mean you make it simple on the offense, but it just makes it easier for you to play fast because you know this thing backwards and forwards. Now you throw in some of the wrinkles and things that maybe you learned at Illinois in the 3 or 4 years he was there as head coach, and you see what you have as a defense. Now the onus is on Nick Caserio to figure out what that personnel is going to be. Because I think what we found out, Mark, over the last 5-6 weeks in particular was – the personnel wasn't where it needed to be because you had some key guys go down. Obviously, it started way back in training camp when Gerrion Conley went down. We knew watching a training camp that we were thin at corner.
Right.
And then it had a domino effect when Gerrion's out. Now Vernon has to go outside. Well, Vernon should have played all year inside. But you don't have Conley, so Vernon's got to go outside. So now you just got this trickle-down effect. Now because Vernon has to go outside, you bring Eric Murray down from safety. Now he's got to play the nickel. He's not back there at safety where he was signed to be. And you've got everything kind of out of joint at that point. And then guys get banged up, and you look out there and go, that's not an NFL defense. So that's got to change. So I think we're all pretty much on the same page. The personnel on defense has got to get better. And here's the tough thing as I saw it at the Senior Bowl. This year, to me, strikes me as strength on the offensive side of the ball.
Senior
Bowl in particular. Just in general, but it feels like it's a really good quarterback class. I love the running backs in this class. Wide receivers are going to be on par with what they were last year. And last year's class was tremendous. It was a tremendous receiver class. The tight ends, I think, are okay. They're not great. But the linemen, the interior linemen, I love them. The tackles, deep. There's not a Laramie, but it's a pretty deep class. Defensively, I think at the top of each position group, you could say, okay, that's Mika Parsons at Bed State, Surtain and Farley at corner, some of those things. But I think beyond that, the depth is it's a little bit stretched. So you're going to have to really search to find some nuggets. We'll see what they do from a roster standpoint. What the salary cap's going to be, how much money they're going to have from a free agent standpoint. But we're at a point where the draft has really got to be how this team gets fed. And we've got to see those year one to year two jumps made. Blacklock, Reed, Grenard, they've got to take that year one to year two jump. Have to. It's a must for those three guys to take that year one to year two jump on defense.
By the way, Brandon Staley, we forgot a football powerhouse that he was at in 2016. That would be John Carroll.
John Carroll, yeah.
Okay. Nick Caserio's alma mater.
There's a lot of guys' alma mater,
Josh McDaniel's alma mater.
Mm-hmm. A lot of guys went to John Carroll. It's a cradle of coaches,
yeah.
D3 style.
The younger brother of Josh, Ben McDaniels, yes. reportedly hired by the Texans mm-hmm. to be an offensive assistant, but he didn't go to John Carroll. He went to Kent State as a quarterback.
Ooh.
And so did Julian Edelman, who you already mentioned in this segment. Oh, my gosh. It's all come around full circle. It's amazing.
It's all coming together.
Amazing.
It's coming together.
But, yeah, look, they're not done with the staff yet, and they're not close to announcing. Well, maybe they are close. Maybe, like, tomorrow. We got it all wrapped up, and here it is at 4 o'clock. Mm-hmm. I don't know, but I hope it's soon because that's when HoustonTexans.com, we can come out with all the profiles on them and interview yep. them and just get all that information out there. I mean, we've gotten to know Nick a little bit in the last few weeks, and obviously they've been really busy trying to put this thing together. And Coach Culley, who, look, I understand, you know, people – boy, that came out of nowhere in a lot of people's eyes. I think his name surfaced in a report maybe a week and a half out. Yeah. And I thought, all right, that's a guy to keep an eye on. And eventually he becomes the coach. There were seven openings, Johnny, and four of the seven were what I would call out-of-the-box kind of hires. You know what I mean? Sort of upset
Well, names
picks.
People weren't talking about.
Yeah, names that – well, yeah, because – and that's a good point. That's a good way you put it right there because – who knows what the internal lists are of all these organizations right. who are either definitely looking or possibly looking for a head coach like back in November, December, right?
Right.
When, you know, like Jacksonville, you know that Doug Marrone's not going to be back, all right? Yeah. But he's still coaching the team for a few more weeks here, and we've got a list. We're working on Urban Meyer, right?
Right.
I mean, who knows how long they had their eye on him and if the Texas thing fell through because Urban thought, I think I can go to Jacksonville. I'd rather right. go to the NFL and all of that. Who knows how that all plays out and some of those untold stories we'd all love to know. But when you look at Dan Campbell, I think Urban Meyer is not out of the box, but it is to a degree because he's a college coach, but he's a really good one. You
and
know,
he'd been out of the game. Well, he had not been coaching. He'd been on TV for a while, but ever coached. I think he coached in the pros for a little bit. I can't remember, actually. I just remember him being a college guy.
Bowling Green, Utah.
Yeah, Bowling
Florida,
Green, Utah,
Ohio
Florida.
State.
Yeah.
I mean, so you got
I want to say he snuck in an NFL year in there, which we've
I'll
seen. Matt Rhule did that before he ended up going back to the NFL. I think he had a year or two when he was with the Packers, I think.
You know who else has, I think, a little bit of NFL? Is James Franklin of Penn State.
Yes. Yes. So, he was with the Packers.
All right. So,
yeah, so
that's a guy to keep your eye on in the future.
But you're right. You know, names that we were. Because when Bill O'Brien was fired in week four, and immediately people are like, okay, well, who's next? Who's next? You made a list, right? Everybody
right.
made a list. Eric Bieniemy, Robert Saleh, Brian Daboll,
right.
Joe Brady,
Eberflus,
Matt Eberflus.
Mm hmm.
Of those five guys, those are the five names hottest, as I do air quotes.
Are we forgetting everything? Anybody? I think
those
that's
are the
it.
Ones right off the
I
top.
I think that's it.
One.
Oh,
guy.
Arthur Smith.
Okay, that's six. Two of the six. 33% of those got head coaching jobs. So those, and that happens every.
But it's
year.
Weird because the Colts' offensive coordinator Nick Sirianni,
he gets a head he gets a job.
Rams defensive coordinator, what?
Yeah.
He becomes the Chargers head coach. All right, we've got to take a break. But when we come back, more on the Texans offseason to-do list, which is going to be a little bit different with no combine. Normally, we'd be gearing up for the combine right now in a couple of weeks. Not going to happen. It's going to be very different this offseason. Plus, thoughts on the Super Bowl. Who are you rooting for last night? That's what I wanted. True confessions about the Super Bowl, because that was bizarre watching what went down last night. It's Texans Radio.
Can't get enough Texans radio? We've got shows, we've got podcasts, we've got interviews. It's all on HoustonTexans.com. Back to the show that keeps you up to date on the Houston Texans. Texans All Access.
All right, Johnny's talking me into watching Raiders 30 for 30.
It's awesome. Al Davis NFL versus history. The NFL. It's awesome. It is a great history lesson because you go back and go, wow, how did we get here with the Raiders?
Yeah.
But not only that, how did we get here with the NFL? Why were teams moving? Why did Baltimore move to Indianapolis? Why did Cleveland move to Baltimore? And it's all sort of summed up. Yeah. It's kind of all summed up in this documentary, this 30 for 30. It's fantastic.
And you're freaking me out with everybody saw Vince Lombardi last night, right?
Yeah, which was wild.
Well,
that was wild.
Hang on a second, though. They nailed the visual, but the voice.
Yeah, the voice was not
good. I mean, what? you're right there. How hard is it to get a guy? What the hell's going on around here? Like, I can't do that. But you can get people to do a good Vince Lombardi New York accent, and instead you had... You sounded like Bane meets Sean Connery. Hello. Hello, NFL. I mean, what is that voice? That's not Vince Lombardi's voice. Not even. I mean, everyone's going to understand. It's not going to be close. But anyway, this Al Davis versus the NFL 30 for 30, they have a Pete Rozelle guy.
And an Al Davis.
This is freaky. This technology freaks me. I don't like it. Although, wait a second. Think about Sean Connery.
Wait, hold on.
What?
You could call Texans games forever.
I could be immortalized.
Yes, you could do them. You could do them forever.
This is going to be so good.
Maybe that technology works.
I'll just speak into a computer.
See what I'm talking about?
Oh, see what I'm saying? I'm looking at Al Davis.
They're showing it in studio, and there's this technology. They use some different technology where you map their faces, and then overlay it. It's amazing.
You know, think about all the fake videos and fake news and everything. Oh, terrible. But anyway, the Lombardi thing last night. Look, I thought, like I said, I thought they did a hell of a job putting on the Super Bowl. They really did. In the pandemic and everything. I mean, come on. They did a nice job yesterday. I might as well go here since we're here right now. So now that Brady's not a Patriot, and he's the old guy, 43 years old. You know how I feel about the Patriots, Johnny.
Yes, I do.
I don't like them.
Yes, I know.
I hate them like poison. Yes. But
you have sports hate for the Patriots.
I have healthy sports hate for the Patriots. But I do like a lot of people who work there. You know, we have some friends there and everything. But and some of them are here right now, like Nick, and, you know, whatever. So I'm just thinking, though, Tom Brady at 43 with another team, an NFC team, I got on board. I got to tell you. Especially since the Chiefs are in danger of becoming the new Patriots, the new nemesis in the conference that you got to deal with. And, you know, I like, again, Mahomes is very likable. You know, Andy Reid is likable.
The Chiefs are not.
But I hate the Chiefs. So I wanted them to go down. And at the same time, I got to see old guy Tom
do it
outperform young guy Mahomes. Now, I know it's not apples to apples and the offensive line issues with the Chiefs and everything like that, but... Tom Brady walks into the room and the culture changes. It's that simple, really. And all the work he puts in, nobody wants to disappoint him. The defense plays better when Brady's on the team.
So let me ask you this. Yeah. Did you find yourself last night? Let's go. It's 7-3 and Brady goes back to pass and he's looking.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden Gronk breaks free and he ends on.
I didn't like that part.
Did you cheer?
No.
Did you fist pump anything?
No. I was happy the Bucs scored, but I was like, Gronk. Because Brady to Gronk, I don't like, because that's too Patriot-ish. Brady on another team with all different guys, okay. But with Gronk there, it's a little too... It would be like Edelman being on the Bucs too. No. I can't have that. But look, I accepted it because I had to have the Chiefs lose last night. You know, everybody has such bravado involved with the Kansas City Chiefs organization right now. And look, believe me, I would too. So I admit that.
I'm glad you said that. I'm glad you won't out anybody. I know you won't, but.
Oh.
But I was very. I'll just put it this way. I was driving up to get tested this morning, and Sean and Seth had a segment in which Kevin Harley. Well, wasn't a streaker. Mm-hmm. Some idiot went on the field last night.
Yeah.
And Kevin Harden's like, he's got a bra on. It wasn't a bra. It was like a
onesie.
It was like a Borat onesie. And his shorts fell down. And Harlan did it perfectly. He did it awesome.
Yeah.
Kansas City Chiefs broadcast was not quite in the... It's such a funny mood at that point.
Oh.
They were not down with
they
the
played
sickness.
That audio?
Oh, it was
well,
not.
Look, anyways. Harlan's doing an objective broadcast where he's just having a good time and he's going to walk out of there.
And the Chiefs are feeling
Harlan is the former voice of the Chiefs, by the way. Harlan used to do Chiefs games before Mitch Holthus, the current guy.
Right. Anyways, the Chiefs, look, I love Andy Reid. I've known people that work for Andy. Yeah. They adore him. They love him. And, I mean, I think fantastic. There are plenty of Chiefs players, and the Chiefs fans got just so, there's something about them the last couple of years. I remember when we went up there week six last year, they had got the Colts beat them the Sunday night before.
Right, they beat them up physically.
And I just remember reading comments from the Chiefs fans like, I thought they were going to go 16-0. This team was just loaded with everything.
Yeah.
They were loaded with it. And then we went in and just kicked them up and down the field. I mean, it was brutal.
They physically got beaten up.
And it was like one excuse after the other.
Yeah.
Oh, Mahomes. It was like, and then when they won it, it became, and then of course they followed it up this year with being as good as the Chiefs were.
Yeah.
They were incorrigible. It was like you guys are not the greatest team since sliced bread. And somebody at some point is going to pop you. The Browns had an opportunity. And couldn't finish. The Browns had an opportunity but couldn't finish you.
All right, I have a point to make about that, but I also have a theory. I feel like I haven't been on the air in like 6 weeks.
We have.
It's true.
We have.
I have a theory about the fan base thing that you just pointed out.
Yeah.
Any team's fan base, any team that has that kind of success, their fan base is going to be intolerable.
True.
All right, it doesn't matter who it is. Longhorn fan base when the Longhorns are good. Intolerable. Aggies, intolerable. Okay? UH, intolerable. All right? Texans, give me a Super Bowl. I'll be intolerable too. All right? I promise you. We're every fan base out there that has a great deal of success. Patriots fans? Are you kidding? Cowboys don't even get me. They're intolerable and they don't even have success for 25 years.
Look, the Chiefs fan base is great. Yeah. They are rabid. They are there early. There is a butt in a seat when 12 noon hits and it's kickoff. We saw that in week 6. My favorite fan story ever. Actually, it didn't even happen at the actual stadium. This is last year's playoff game. So we go over on the bus, and that day it was kind of gray and cloudy, and it was chilly. And so we're driving over, and you go on. I don't know what the highway is, Highway 70, Highway 30. I don't know what it is. But we're on the highway. We're all on the bus. I think the first buses go. It's like two buses go. And so I'm on the second bus, and I'm just looking out, and there's some snow on the ground. And we could kind of drive on the highway past kind of a neighborhood. And so we see this guy, this nice house. This guy comes running out, and he's got pajama pants on. He's got a Mahomes jersey on. And he literally, the sidewalk brings him all the way to like this fence that separates the highway from the housing. And I'm telling you, you see the door fly open and you see this guy just run out. Literally just run to the end of the sidewalk and then all of a sudden just throws double birds at both buses going by.
Oh, that's a good one.
We were playing like two, so this is probably, I don't know, 9:30, 10 o'clock in the morning.
In his PJs.
In his PJs, just running out, just like,
knowing
just giving it to everybody.
He knows the route. He knows the bus route of the opponents.
I know. He knows it.
That's ready.
Exactly. It's exactly right. He knew the bus route. He knew we were coming
by. I'm just glad he had his PJ pants on.
That's a good point.
You know?
I was a little surprised when I thought about what he was doing.
Mm-hmm.
The bus arrival was one of my favorite things because you never know what's going to happen.
Hey,
you have no idea. Philly? Oh, Philly was awesome. And you never played Philly.
Johnny,
you played there every 8 years.
You haven't lived till you've taken the bus into Morgantown, West Virginia with the Miami Hurricanes and little old ladies. Literally, little old ladies flipping you the bird. I'm thinking, God bless West Virginia. Yeah. Now, I love West Virginia. You know that because I love the Greenbrier.
We can go back.
In fact,
we start that rumor we're going back deep.
I saw Nick Caserio in the hallway last week, and like, it took everything I had not to say, please send us back to the Greenbrier.
Yes.
Like before welcome and hello, and you know, I'd met him on Zoom, and we've talked a little bit on Zoom, but like, please send us back to the Greenbrier. But I never got that in.
Mark. Mark.
Yeah, whatever.
The Greenbrier.
I'm nobody, just Greenbrier. Anyway, the divisional game with the Browns and Chiefs.
Yeah.
Mahomes had the concussion in that game, right? Or evaluated for a concussion.
Yes.
And Henny played the rest of the game.
Yep.
Look, I'm not a conspiracy guy, and I'm sure he passed all the protocols, baseline, whatever the tests are they give him. He didn't look right to me last night, and it's not just a toe. You and I can debate all day long. You don't think
I think it was the toe.
I thought, look, he ran around. He threw a ball in midair on a rope that hit a receiver in the face, a 30-yard rope while he was falling down and got nothing on it. He had the physical goods. I feel
Well, he can do that with his arm, though.
Yeah, but I feel like... Yeah, I know.
You've seen
but
him
he got outside
throws.
The pocket a few times.
He did as he was limping. And part of the time he got outside the pocket is because the Bucs, which I thought was a great wrinkle.
They pressured him well.
Well, the Bucs put a couple of their big guys outside.
Yeah.
So they, at one point they had Vita Vea outside, who's like 500 pounds. And then they had Jason Pierre-Paul on the inside. And You know that, I mean, we don't have a Vita Vea, but in 19, when Charles Omenihu has the big sack, where did he get it? He got it when he went inside. Well, Jason Pierre-Paul is kind of a, I mean, Charles Omenihu is kind of a.
All right, who was outside when Omenihu was inside?
Vea,
but
Vea.
for us. Omenihu,
I don't remember. I think it may have been, I know JJ was on the other side.
Well, you said 2019, so could they have had Reader outside or
could
something like that?
Could have been. We didn't do that exact thing, but the thought was they wanted to get Pierre-Paul in guards. And by putting Vea outside, they knew Vea would just crush a tackle. Mahomes
just
would have to rush bubble.
Him.
Yeah. And then they just sat in a two-shell all night and were like, we're going to take this away. I thought one of the great things they did was if Kelce and Tyreek were on the same side, they would make sure that four guys playing in a zone were over that two-player side. Mm-hmm. Because by the time that Mahomes looked over there and was like, I can't get this to anybody, the pass rush is on him. He couldn't get to the other side.
Right.
And that was brilliant. And that's what I said it a million times about these guys. You got it. I don't care how you do it. Kelce and Hill, you got to slow them down in some way, shape, or form. So they learned from the first one. You can't leave your guys out on islands against Tyreek. But if you play 4-over-2, which is what they did, it was brilliant. And they learned from that first one, which I thought was great. Here's the other one.
Mm-hmm.
We've said this a million times. If you're going to beat the Chiefs, you better slow down Kelce. You better slow him down. Tyreek had two touchdowns against us in that game we won. But we slowed down Kelce. Now, we did it with a bunch of safeties.
Still had a bunch of catches, but slowed him down.
Right. How did the Bucs do it for the most part last night?
He was just getting short stuff.
Levante David.
Oh, yeah.
Linebacker.
Right,
Levante David was awesome.
That Devin White. Oh, my gosh.
The tackle he makes on Clyde Edwards-Helaire, where he actually false steps and still gets to the outside and tackles Clyde Edwards-Helaire for a, it's like, I knew he could run.
Are you with me, though? The Chiefs should have run the ball a little bit more.
Hindsight. Should have, but then you're running against Vea and Pierre-Paul. Then you're running against those two linebackers. They couldn't get to those two linebackers. Those guys are going to run everything down.
It was a tough night.
That defense,
for them, man.
When we played Tampa last year, we went to Tampa last year, you and I were on the plane like, that defense is no joke now. Now, we knew that defense was good.
They got some players.
They were very good. Devin White was a rookie, so you could tell there wasn't much there. But we knew with Sue and Vea, Pierre-Paul, Shaq Barrett.
Remember, even with Winston, the offense was high-flying for a while. They had won, four in a row when we played them.
Exactly.
And then Winston threw all those picks. But they add Fournette, and good for him, right? I mean, I think they added a quarterback, too.
He
hunch.
Was pretty good.
All right,
12.
Next up, next steps for the Houston Texans coming up this offseason, Texans Radio.
Texans All Access continues in a moment. Don't miss an episode of our Texans podcasts. Subscribe on iTunes, TuneIn, and Stitcher to get the latest sent right to your phone.
Oh, yeah. Mark Vandermeer and John Harris with you. Season 10 of Texans radio shows beginning tonight, day after the Super Bowl. Johnny and I working together in our 8th season doing these programs. And tomorrow night we'll have Drew and DP on with us, and we'll do a lot of fun stuff. We're going to have fun, okay? We're going to do our best. We're going to have fun whether you like it or not. All right, so next up for the Houston Texans, Johnny, as they got to figure out the rest of the staff.
Yeah, got to figure out the rest of the staff.
Have I missed it? I haven't seen any O-line coach report.
That's the one I haven't seen that I can remember. But I will admit, they were all just being fired from all different
angles.
Locations. And I was in Mobile, and I was trying to focus on the Senior Bowl. And then David was hired, and I want to say I was watching his press conference, and I was still in Mobile. So all that was going on there. Thing is when a coach gets hired and the staff comes along, I mean, it's just like bing, bang, boom. I mean, it is happening all over the place. Wait, this guy's saying this. Just kind of have to wait until everything shakes out. But that's the one I have not heard is offensive line.
Here's how I look at any offseason moves by any team, really. Okay, there's what you do in the offseason and how people react to it, right? Mm-hmm. Which, obviously, judging from, you know, the general reaction, it's not exactly like setting the marquee aflame right here.
Right.
I understand that, and I'll admit that. And, look, I've admitted that before about things this organization has done. But very often, not very often, but sometimes they've done the unpopular thing and it works out really well. Like 2006, you know, and I was asking people, like, How does this compare to 2006 in your mind? Because I just want to get some different perspectives. Because, look, I was on these airwaves in the afternoon with Rich Lord during 2006 offseason. And even though Gary Kubiak was just hired, we were all very happy about that. But we immediately jumped into this whole VY Reggie Bush. Not Mario Williams wasn't even in the equation. It was VY Reggie Bush.
I know which
debate.
Side Rich was on.
Oh, Rich was. Yeah. I mean, and McClain, too. All right. And it was like Invasion of the Body Snatchers. And I love Vince. I really do. I think Vince, that Rose Bowl where he won the national championship, the one over Michigan was pretty good, too. But the national championship was maybe the greatest college game I've ever seen. And I used to be a college announcer for a pretty good team. So all that, great. But I was like, look, you know, I really believed, honestly, that, you know, David needed a shot with Gary Kubiak. And they did, too. And obviously that didn't work out. So, you know, maybe VY would have been different with Gary. But the whole point is this. That offseason wasn't really popular to lean toward Reggie Bush. And then really not popular to pick Mario Williams the night
before
the draft.
Stop the insanity. Yeah, and then on into the season.
Well, and then on into the season. So that whole thing stretched out. And, you know, did it resolve great for anybody? Look, Mario turned out to be the right pick, you know. Now, if you had 3-4 years of success with Vince, I could still argue today that that would have been nice, you know, to do some of those things with Vince. But look, as overall, you pick the guy who out of those three has had the best career, right? Mm-hmm. It hasn't been a tremendous career. I feel like Mario was on track to do some really great things had he not gotten hurt in week 5 in 2011
That
it hurt him so bad because he was on nearly a Hall of Fame track when you look at the numbers, just the raw numbers of it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, he gets the huge deal with Buffalo. It's never quite the same. We don't have to recite all that. But sometimes, hey, Gary Kubiak in 2010. Let's go to that. They don't fire Gary Kubiak. Fans are just furious about that. Mm-hmm. People don't remember. They're furious about that. Yeah. Wade gets hired. Lockout. And, you know, it's not exactly quiet during the offseason, but there's no football news other than the draft itself. And then things really work out well the next year. Look, I don't know
how. Well, the guy they drafted in 2011 was not welcomed with open arms.
Yeah, he was kind of not booed by everybody, but some on draft night. And that, you know, worked out pretty well.
Yeah.
The point is this. I don't know how this is going to play out. You know, it. No matter who you hire, whether it's Bieniemy or Saleh or David Culley, whoever you hire, it almost doesn't matter. It does matter in terms of the way it plays publicly, I guess. But, you know, that is kind of irrelevant until you kick the ball and then you see what the actual results are of what you've done. Look, it could be, look, maybe it doesn't work at all. You know, maybe it works great. The point is we all have a reaction to it right now, good or bad. You know, you might hire the next Vince Lombardi. You might not. But the point is when you kick the ball is when it really matters. But we got 6 months to talk about it, so I know we're going to have a lot to say.
Yeah, you're right.
I don't think I made that point really well, but Mel, I'll be doing it every night, 6 to 7 p.m. right here. I'll be making that same point.
How many times have we heard teams winning the offseason have done jack squat during the season?
Yeah.
I mean, that's essentially it. Now, it may be that you quote unquote lost the offseason. You lose during the season. That happens. But we've seen a lot of teams. Remember the Browns 2 years ago? OBJ, John Dorsey, Baker Mayfield.
Right.
There was all this love, and the Browns are going to be the next thing since greatest thing since sliced bread, and then they turn into a 6-10 team or whatever.
But a year later, they get it going, and who knows? And look, we haven't talked about Deshaun. Look, I want them to kiss and make up.
Yes.
Look, this is me, Texans guy right here. I want this. It's like my parents are fighting. Okay, I want this thing to resolve itself, and I want Watson to play, and everybody to be happy about it. And let's just hope for the very best. I mean, they've been very clear to us, you know, to everybody publicly and to us privately. Mm-hmm. They're not trading Deshaun, okay? I mean, Watson's here. So, all right, great. Watson's here. Now, I know that he has, you know, I guess you could call it options. But, I feel like I'm in a household. And Mom and Dad, stop arguing. Can we please come together?
Well, my mom and dad used to fight. I wanted to make waffles for them. I couldn't do it. But I wanted to. I felt like that would solve the deal.
If we could get everybody together over Johnny's waffles, Everything's fine.
Yeah.
That just sounded so
Oh, man, I made some really good chicken sandwiches yesterday for the Super Bowl, by the way.
You did. I made Vendor ribs. Okay, Joanna, our producer, thank you very much for helping us out tonight. We'll be back tomorrow. Thanks for listening, everybody. We love being on, and have a great night. Go Texans.
This is Texans Radio on Sports Radio 610. 610.